Word of mouth.
I need a dollar, dollar, dollar. That's what I need. Hey, hey, well, I need.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, this is Word of Mouth. I'm Virginia Prescott. In a down economy, most folks are happy to find a crumpled fiver in a jacket pocket or to fish out quarters to pay for parking. Not David Wallman. David is a contributing editor at Wired Magazine and author of The End of Money. For the book, he crossed the globe to explore the notion that everyone might benefit from a cash-free world. And he joins us on the line now from Oregon. Good to have you with us, David.
Good morning.
So I guess you put your money where your mouth is on this one and spent an entire year avoiding cash. What were you trying to do?
Well, this was my way of trying to keep the subject matter in the forefront of my mind on a daily basis. You know, so even if it was a day when that wasn't heavy with reporting and writing, it was like this kind of soundtrack to my daily operation. And what started to happen is I would watch people fishing coins and notes from their wallets at the coffee shop, or I would eye those huge cash delivery trucks down the street, or I would, you know, see these ATM machines that look like they're straight out of 1982 as far as tech savviness.
Mm-hmm.
And so this was my way to kind of, you know, keep rolling with this meditation. And then I wanted to see, you know, how far have we pushed cash to the periphery of our lives today, and what might this cashless future look like?
And you found that it costs a lot of money to maintain cash, to fund those trucks and to staff those trucks and to, you know, stack money inside of those machines. How much money?
Well, these are colossal figures. No one knows exactly, because a lot of the companies that are behind the cash management infrastructure, you know, they're pretty hush-hush about this, you know, because they make a killing. And, you know, this was the broader goal of the project, was to subject cash to a little more scrutiny, because for eons it has really skated by without much criticism, you know, in large part because of our psychological bias for the stuff. And, you know, there's a section in the book also looking at that question. You know, we are, from a very young age, really wired to adore this material representation of the idea of money, right? So ever since that first tooth that you lost and you reached under the pillow for a coin, you know, money has an incredible power over our psyches. And so this is one of the reasons, actually, that the idea of finally doing away with cash, even though we've already pushed it so far to the periphery, finally doing away with that really infuriates a lot of people for various political and ideological reasons, but also because it kind of cuts at this emotional issue a little bit in the way that people will say, you know, e-books, it sounds nice and everything, but, you know, there's just something about the physical.
I just want to hold a book.
Exactly.
And
exactly.
In a similar way, you travel all around the world. I mean, you're sipping Mai Tais with, you know, a counterfeiter in Hawaii, speaking with someone as he's doing transactions on his cell phone in India. You visit rural Georgia, where the idea of cash, that kind of emotional attachment, is it's almost like an article of faith, right? Are you worried that model will break down, this kind of faith-based regard for money?
Well, it's one of the deeper questions I wanted to look at with this project is, you know, what is the nature of money? And the whole thing began when a couple of years ago I wrote just a short, cheeky essay for Wired about, hey, you know, our books, our movies, our music are going digital. Why not cash already? Why do we need to keep this technology around? And the response was just thundering, you know, from people of various political and ideological perspectives. You know, how dare you? You know, you'll have to peel it from my cold, dead hands to, you know, you're just a shill for the credit card companies. God forbid we subject our financial lives to sort of their monitoring capabilities even more. And so this to me right away signaled, my goodness, you know, this could be a worthy topic for a book, and why are people so furious about the idea, when in fact, you know, cash is incredibly expensive and arguably most expensive to those who have so little of it. Mm-hmm. And this was really an illuminating thread for me, you know, as someone who's not trained in international development, you know, this notion that cash is the enemy of the poor because it makes them so much more vulnerable to a loss of whatever savings they've been able to accumulate to try and build financial stability in their lives. And much of that comes from being excluded from the formal economy, right? They don't have a bank account or anything like that. So a storm or a flood or a fire or an earthquake, that can trash all of your wealth overnight, let alone, you know, local neighborhood lenders or someone locally who you actually have to pay to safeguard your money, or a drunk uncle or an abusive spouse who steals what little savings you have that you're trying to store up to send your daughter to school 10 months from now. And so these are some of the themes I wanted to look at. And one of the most exciting technologies that I talk about in the book is really trying to use the mobile phone as a way to help people get past this trap, the cash trap, really, and help them enter into the formal economy and build that stability that you and I take for granted, really, in our everyday lives, because banking is just kind of there. We almost forget that it's really a social service. And I'm talking about banking in the very boring sense of it here, right? This is not collateralized debt obligations or Wall Street crooks or white-collar crime or any of that. Banking in the simple sense of helping us build some financial stability, you know, that is good, if not essential. And I think people overlook that. And that's why this mobile money stuff is so exciting and so sexy, really, to development people, because cash really is the enemy of the poor.
We're talking about dollars, cents, and whether they even make sense anymore with David Wolman, author of The End of Money, also a contributing editor at Wired. Well, so, David, you know, one of the things that you talk about is how counterfeiters and the underworld really plays on our addiction to cash, this kind of idea of having cash. If we did away with cash, wouldn't robberies, counterfeiters replace digital versions of the same financial crimes and take advantage of the poor in the same way that they might with paper cash?
Yes, 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 and yes. I think, you know, it would be silly to think that doing away with cash equals doing away with crime, let alone financial crime. You know, the lion's share of financial crime is already electronic. But, you know, no one can deny the fact that if you were to, you know, outlaw greenbacks tomorrow, you know, the 10,000 bank robberies that happened in America in 2009, 2010, and I'm talking, you know, Firmaterra bank robberies, they just wouldn't have happened. There's no incentive, let alone all of the stick-ups at mom-and-pop shops and all other cash-related crimes, from drug dealers to human trafficking, all of it. You just make their business so much harder. But, you know, and that's because cash is the currency of crime. But, again, absolutely, cash will persist, hacking will persist, you know, problems with credit card fees and privacy, all of that exists. But I actually think that people seem to make this false dichotomy, you know, is it a cash world or a credit card world? And this guy Wolman, he's calling for the credit card world, and, you know, not at all. This book is not a Valentine.
Susie Orman would not do that. You know, she wouldn't tell us to be spending all of our, you know, putting our money out on credit cards. We actually have to have real cash to back that up, right?
Right, but I think what happens is when you start to scrutinize cash a little bit more and understand its broader costs, both to you, because you have to truck to a bank or safety hazards or what have you, and to society at large, if we start to push cash aside, I don't think it will necessarily just be replaced with more of the same, you know, electronic payment options, i.e. credit cards, and I don't think it'll necessarily be a boon for them. I think actually it'll make people a little bit more sophisticated in their understanding of how money and how payments work, right, and how where is the friction in our economic lives, and they'll actually turn toward the third, fourth, and fifth payment options that are out there, so that, you know, they're demanding that the private sector come up with more secure options and options that don't charge such high fees to merchants or to consumers. And I think it will actually bring that stuff into the sunlight and not necessarily just be a boon for the credit card companies that obviously don't really need one.
Well, in addition, I guess, to the sort of abstract and emotional sense of money, passing around cash is really filthy. It's, you know, it's kind of icky.
Well, I appreciate, from one germphobe to another, I appreciate hearing you say that. And, you know, the book, for me, it was a way to explore all of these broader ideas about the nature of money, but through the lens of cash specifically, right? From everything from the amount of germs that it's carrying and this crazy study in Switzerland a couple years ago about trying to grow the influenza virus on the banknotes themselves, you know, all the way to the other end of the spectrum, these much more serious ideas about, you know, how do you bring the 1 billion people out there who have a mobile phone but don't have a bank account? You know, how do you bring them into the formal economy? And, you know, what was was so enjoyable about the project is that these things are all linked together by this technology that is cash, and the question of whether we've finally come to the twilight of the stuff.
What do you think, though? We're not there yet. I think we're
close. You know, the idea I've been talking about recently is that it's like a death by a thousand cuts situation, mm-hmm. right? And I won't be, you know, I'm not going to pretend that I can tell you we're at cut number 892 or 941, but we're definitely getting there, right? I mean, how much of your everyday life now involves cash? I'm guessing not that much,
unless you're
a real tax evader and I just don't know it.
And a part-time taxi driver or waitress, I guess.
Exactly. So, and I'm glad you brought that up because, you know, tipping is one of those essential areas where, you know, now this isn't really tongue-in-cheek stuff at all. You know, there are people out there, millions of people who depend on cash for the lion's share of their income. And then, you know, for the technologists out there, until they can come up with a sufficient alternative or alternatives for tipping people, the bellman, the taxi driver, the waiter, you know, there's no way we should be thinking about getting rid of cash completely. And I'm certainly not someone who's advocating, you know, stiffing the 99% here, like prematurely. But, you know, once you start to tell people in the service industry that, in fact, customers tip more when they pay with a credit card, people's sort of reflexive defense for cash, I wouldn't say it ends right there, but, you know, they start to slow down a little once you peel it away at the onion layers a little.
Well, David, I really want to thank you for joining us. A lot to think about today. Appreciate your time.
Oh, thank you.
David Wolman, author of The End of Money and a contributing editor at Wired Magazine. You can read more about his book at our website. That's at wordofmouthradio.org. Stay with us for more Word of Mouth. On my hands with the cuts and something I want to own.